What's up? Another episode of Ripple Effect Podcast. I'm your host, Ricardo Renz, also known as Ricky France, and a great episode for you today. Today we have journalist, documentary filmmaker, researcher, Dan Dix from Press for Truth. I'm sure you guys have seen his work all over the place. If you've been in the alternative media community, then I'm sure you have run into Dan Dix. His website, Press for Truth CA, is the best place to get all his content, but he's also available in many other places, which we discuss on the show. We also discuss that his YouTube page was banned and that whole story. But since we record this, usually I turn these shows around pretty quickly. I get them out usually within a couple days, the most a week after I record it, and it's not that big of a deal. This time, since we recorded the show, his YouTube channel is back, so you can find him on YouTube, and I'll put that in the show description. But just kind of informing you about that, I'm going to try to talk faster than usual if possible, because there's so much I want to tell you guys about. The Ripple Effect Podcast is now also on Fringe FM. It's a great app. You can find 24/7 alternative media. My show is going to be on Wednesday nights, 6 p.m. Eastern time till 9 p.m. Eastern time, I believe. So definitely check it out. Fringe FM. Get the app. If you have a cell phone, download the app. You can listen to a bunch of awesome shows. And a bunch of other shows have recently been picked up too, like Grime America, Charlie Robinson's Macroaggressions. So a great place to just get exposed to some new content, some new hosts and researchers, and some fun, cool stuff. And another way of kind of bypassing censorship, because they have their own platform. They do everything themselves. They don't depend on anybody else. So it's a great app. And you can also listen to it on a desktop. So please check out Fringe FM this Wednesday, and every Wednesday you'll be able to hear the Ripple Effect Podcast. Also, I'm going to start my new Rockfin show. It's going to be the first solo show. I'm going to give it a try, see how I do, see how I like talking to myself for a while. I know it doesn't sound too hard to believe that I don't like not having a guest and just talking by myself, because sometimes these intros are kind of long. But to do a 5-minute intro or 4-minute intro isn't too hard, but to do a maybe 20-minute or 30-minute podcast, it might be difficult. We'll see how it goes. I don't know what I'm going to talk about. I don't know how long it's going to go for. I don't know any of those things. So definitely check out rockfin.com/ripple effect to go to my Rockfin page. It's another great way of supporting the show. If you subscribe to my show, I don't even know how any of the monetizing or any of that stuff works in Rockfin, but please subscribe to the show. Check it out. I already have a page up, and hopefully soon after you hear this show, we'll have the first Ricky Rants on Rockfin podcast. And so it's going to be presented by the Ripple Effect Podcast. It'll be kind of similar, and just no guests. I'm just going to talk about what's on my mind and maybe things I've watched, music I'm listening to, whatever it may be, whatever comes to mind, I'm going to talk about it. To be honest, I don't know how it's going to go or where I'm going to go with the conversation. So maybe that adds a little bit of sexy to wanting to check it out to see what the hell I do end up talking about. But also, my recent Ripple Effect podcast with Dr. David Martin, tons of great feedback. A lot of people have been hitting me up telling me they really liked that episode. And I think last time I got this much feedback was actually the other star of the Plandemic documentary, Mickey Willis. That is episode 271. Definitely check out that episode. That was a great episode that was actually censored on iTunes for a while. And so if you can't find it, check out Odyssey, check out Float, check out Spotify, Podcast Addict, whatever other platform you use to listen to podcasts. But it was episode 271. It was almost a three-hour conversation with Mickey Willis, the filmmaker of the Plandemic documentary. And then I had on Dr. David Martin, which was a great, fun discussion. So definitely check that out. And Grand Theft World, hosted by my good friend Richard Grove, just featured a clip from that show on his podcast. So check out Grand Theft World. He's also on Rockfin, but you can also find his YouTube channel and all that stuff. It's a great show that kind of goes through all the news of the week, and he uses a lot of resources from like Del Bigtree, Jason Burmes, my show, a bunch of James Corbett, a bunch of alternative media platforms and content creators. He takes good stuff that we're doing and then talks about it, analyzes it, and all that type of stuff. So a great show. Definitely check that out. I think that's about it. Of course, if you want to support the show, we have a Patreon page. It'll be in the show description. If you want to tip the show, we have a PayPal account in the show description. Everything's going to be in the show description. All the other places, I had a hard time saying subscription. All the alternative platforms I'm on will also be in the show description. And Patreon, we are doing Patreon podcasts. So I send a Zoom link to all my Patreon supporters and they get to join in on a podcast. We've done one of them already. It was awesome. I got to connect with the listeners. The listeners got to connect with each other. Really fun. And then the next one, I think I'm going to save for my 300th episode and maybe even have some of my podcast friends join in and surprise us. So hopefully that's going to be coming up very soon because I think this is episode 297. So coming very soon, I'll schedule it and we'll celebrate the 300th episode together. And so please support the show, my merch store, the Ripple Effect Podcast, merch.com. And finally, I think that's it, guys. I will talk to you guys on the next one. What's up, Dan?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good, good.
Awesome. Cool. All right. Finally making it happen.
Finally, yeah, yeah. It's been a wild 2020 and 2021. I feel like for alternative media, there's been good things and bad things. You know, in regards to obviously there's endless amounts of things to discuss and analyze, but of course, the lockdowns and all that stuff. And I actually was just on your, I don't know if it was Odyssey channel or maybe even your website. And I was watching one of your recent videos of walking around Canada, talking to people. Mm. And I almost need those videos from time to time because I talk to so many people who are like-minded and are reasonable. And when, you know, you kind of break down like how silly this all is and how it's counterproductive and how it's not about the virus anymore. And there's all this evidence of it. And, you know, people seem to kind of understand that aspect of it. And then you go on the streets and you see all these people that are like still convinced like, oh, I just need the vaccine and the world will go back to normal. Or, you know, if you don't wear a mask, it's inconsiderate and all this stuff. And even though you're telling them like 99% of us are going to be okay, which is mm-hmm. information that 9 months ago was being, you know, you were called a conspiracy theorist if you even entertained the idea that it was totally. Just a bad flu, you know? So it was a little scary. How's your take on it? Like when you talk to people like that,
hey, just, have we started or?
Yeah, no, I started recording immediately that way.
I wasn't sure if we're like, we've started this or.
Yeah, we'll jump right into it. So what is your take on when you do? So for people who are listening, you're not on YouTube anymore, which you can get into also, because it's this whole Trump getting banned everywhere is a much bigger issue than just Trump. I mean, Trump is just scratching the surface on how scary this is when all the big tech companies can collude and make you disappear from the face of the earth, basically. And but when you do videos like your recent one, walking around Canada, trying to have open dialogue with people, just chatting with them about, you know, their take on what's going on and the lockdowns, if it's going too far and all this stuff, how do you feel when you kind of come away from doing those interviews? Do you feel like, I mean, I almost feel like it's hard to feel optimistic, right? You kind of feel like there's still so many people who are brainwashed even this much time later.
Yeah, unfortunately, this video correctly showed the true proportional response, so to speak. Like it was maybe 60-40, maybe even more, or were on the side of pro-lockdown, pro-mandatory vaccine and all that sort of stuff, which is disheartening. You know, it makes us realize we still got a lot of work to do out there. And I mean, we've started to know that just by simply looking around. Obviously these days you can tell who's watching far too much television just by looking at their faces. And so yeah, we know this is getting bad, but I guess I was hoping to find just a few more people who, you know, were as awake to this scandemic as we are, but sadly, we only found maybe 2 out of 10 or 12 people who seemed to have really been fully awake. So, yeah, it's a little disheartening. It means we've got a lot of work to do.
Well, that's why the censorship issue is such a big deal, because in a way I blame them for a lack of logically looking at this, for tribalism and just defending your team regardless what position they have. But in a way, it's also the fault of big tech and the lack of free speech and censorship. Because even if you try to do some research now, if you're not aware of Odyssey or Float or BitChute, and you go on the typical platforms like YouTube or Twitter or Facebook, you're force-fed one narrative and one side of the argument. And we can't make logical decisions and informed decisions if that information is being manipulated or being censored.
Well, this has been on the agenda for a long time. People don't realize that years ago they were trying to put pen to paper and get this stuff written into law with, you know, CISPA, PIPA, SOPA, ACTA. They kept rebranding them and trying to pass this legislation to be able to do the things we're doing today, but it was constantly rejected. Fast forward to 2020 and 2021 when they decided, okay, forget trying to make it a law. Let's just start doing it. And they essentially, the governments in tandem with Silicon Valley just began pulling the trigger on certain accounts. And guys like me got the chopping block. My Facebook page got deleted, 350,000 followers. My YouTube page got deleted, 272,000 followers. My PFD Twitter account got deleted with 25,000 followers. So they've been trying to control the narrative for a long time and have been losing that battle in the courts, so to speak. But now they're just playing dirty and they're just going for it and starting to chop people down left, right, and center. And they didn't do it all at once. It's been happening somewhat incrementally. Everybody remembers what happened to Alex Jones. We got to remember he was kind of the first domino to be memory holed, to be pushed back into the far corners of the internet. And then they started taking out guys like me and now going for as big as guys like Trump. It's just absolutely shocking the amount of power that they have today to be able to control the free flow of information. And as you said, it's an interesting time. We have all these decentralized blockchain-based technologies and platforms popping up. But unless the masses start to adopt these new platforms, we're just going to be preaching to the choir in an echo chamber. So, it's an interesting time when it comes to the free flow of information online. It can go a number of ways right now.
Yeah, but you know, the counter argument is also that Twitter and Facebook and YouTube is also going to be an echo chamber from the other perspective, you know, and that's kind of what's happening because they're banning anybody else who's kind of saying anything outside the box. And it really does seem like it's an echo chamber, and maybe an echo chamber because people are self-censoring, because that's the other thing too. It's like, you know, as you know, that other show we do with the Union of the Unwanted.
Hey, guys, sorry about that.
That's all right.
Hey, buddy, don't worry about it. Sorry about that.
It's all right. And that's going to scare some people with headphones on. But yeah, I mean, it is one of those things where, like, now people who are still on those platforms are self-censoring, and that becomes an issue too, you know, where you start getting worried about saying things that might get you banned or in trouble. In your case, like, did all those things happen more or less roughly around the same time? Was there any specific topic or video or anything that you can pinpoint that really brought all those things into play in regards to censoring you on all those platforms?
To be honest, I think this all began when I started covering the anti-lockdown protests here in Vancouver. Back when I started covering that in April of 2020, you know, there was maybe a dozen people who would come out to these things. Since then, it's grown into the thousands and thousands. And I did notice that YouTube started removing certain live streams. When I was live streaming a anti-lockdown protest, they would remove it. I wouldn't get a copyright strike. I wouldn't get a community guideline strike. They would just delete the video. And so that's when I started feeling, something's happening here. And then it was like a snowball effect. In fact, there was an event that did happen. I was attacked at a Black Lives Matter rally by a group of BLM and Antifa. They physically attacked me. I was surrounded by a mob of about 150 people. There were about a dozen officers who formed a circle of protection around me. They ended up assaulting me, and I got arrested for that one. So I ended up being arrested in that situation, which is absolutely crazy to think about. But this is all part of the targeting. Sorry, I forget the main question you had there. Why I even brought that up in the first place? But yeah, what was your main question again?
Oh, if there was anything specific that got you. Yeah.
So that moment triggered a bunch of, let's say, a flagging campaign, a mass flagging campaign against me, because it was perceived that I'm this white supremacist. So yes, Silicon Valley is pulling the trigger here, but there are also minions within the system who are actually going around and doing these things. I got my GoFundMe terminated, and my MailChimp account was deleted. This is because there are people who are mass flagging these companies and saying, you got to look into this guy. He shouldn't be on your platform. And some of these platforms kowtow to the mob. And so it's kind of people within government and Silicon Valley all working together to silence their opposition, to silence any voice that goes against the status quo. In Canada, there's literally a group called Anti-Hate, antihate.ca. The Canadian government gave them a grant, $270,000, to hunt out hate groups. They've identified me as being one of these hateful people in Canada, and I've slowly started to see these different platforms removing me. So it's been these liberal minions who have literally been doing the legwork of flagging me and contacting these companies. But ultimately, it's the guys at Silicon Valley that flip the switch at the end of the day and pull the plug on me.
Well, I mean, hateful. I mean, that's ridiculous. You go out on the streets and you will actually try to have a civil dialogue discussion with people who you disagree with or might disagree with you. I mean, that's how you fight bad ideas is with good ideas. You have these discussions, you share your philosophies, your perspectives. And even if you, at the end of the discussion, you still disagree. I always say this, like, you learn this with your friends, with your marriage, with your kids. Talking about and communicating is important, because even if you still disagree, you at least have a better understanding of each other's position, which is very valuable and I think very important.
Yeah, that's exactly what we need moving forward. But unfortunately, that's not what the other side is capable of. When they were accusing me, for example, of being a white supremacist, I challenged them. I said, give me one example, anything I've ever said, show me a clip, give me a quote, show me anything that would make you think that I am this thing. And never could they come up with anything. And often when you start to challenge their ideology, they just kind of shut down and run away. I mean, I don't know if you saw the video at the point with the two girls where I was really starting to hit them up with some of the information that they're not getting from the mainstream, and they crumbled in their dialogue and they essentially just turned around and walked away. It's because, you know, they don't have the ammo that we do. But it's important to better understand each other. Absolutely. That's why I love having these conversations. I learn, you know, their perspective a lot more, and sometimes have a better appreciation for it, and sometimes have a better idea of how to counter these ideas, you know, when I come across them from people. And then I know how to answer that one next time I come across that situation. So it's nothing but good moving forward. That's why I teamed up with a guy who's got a channel called Got Dialogue. And I thought, you know what, why don't I collaborate with this guy? His whole shtick is, let's open up a dialogue. So I was like, let's go do that. Let's go open up a dialogue in Vancouver. And I'm pretty happy with the results. I think we may do more of these videos, make it more of a regular thing. And hopefully we'll find more people who are awake out there, but we'll see.
Yeah, those two girls, one of them said something about having a medical condition. I think ignorance was the medical condition, but she's like, you know, so I think you not wearing a mask is, it's like, she swore, she's like, it's fucking disrespectful or something along those lines. And the problem with having these discussions is that too often that's how quickly they get completely off topic or they become pointless, because somebody will get emotional. It becomes an emotional discussion, not a logical discussion about the information. And then, you know, so it's weird to me. It's weird because I always, you know, you look at like the left historically, you know, anti-war, you know, they want everybody to have freedoms, they want gay people to get married, which I'm for too. I always say, like, my beliefs haven't changed. It's just, I stand here and then I look back and see who has my back. It's like, oh, it used to be the left, now it's the right. This is weird, because I'm like, I haven't changed, but apparently what the parties stand for change. I mean, personally, I'm a political atheist anyways. I don't give a shit about either party. I think if all your thoughts and philosophies and perspectives can fit in one little bubble and you can agree with that party on every issue, then maybe you're not really thinking things out yourself. You know, I mean, I don't see how anybody can kind of fit in either or box and not disagree with their party at some moments, you know, and on certain issues. So I think that's a huge issue too. But yeah, I mean, too often these discussions get emotional, and that's the thing. Like, this is, you know, even this past election, like, people kept thinking I was some type of Trump supporter. I'm like, I'm not a Trump supporter. I just don't want a experimental vaccine to be force-fed into the public. I don't want to be forced, you know, to wear masks. I don't want everybody to completely ignore all the other negative aspects of how we're handling a virus that 99% of us are going to be okay with. You know, we're ignoring the suicide rates, the alcoholism, the small businesses that are failing, the fact that we're going to be forced to have to go to big corporate businesses, you know, chain restaurants and big box stores because all the little mom and pop places are out of business. Like, we can't just ignore that. Like, the fact that people are ignoring that and pretending, and unfortunately, everything becomes a political football where everything becoming political. You either wear a mask, you don't wear a mask to make a political statement. You know, so all these things became a political statement. So it even in America, you're having discussions like the one, you know, your personal experience on the street, that people are just getting emotional and it is hard to have logical discussions. You did have success though, besides those two girls. Most people were willing to talk to you and really have these discussions, even if they disagreed with you. There's a lot of people I've interviewed that have this dilemma of, like, should you just give up on people? Like, there's people who, if you haven't been convinced that this is a lie now, then you're hopeless. Or do you feel like maybe these discussions, like, there's still some hope? Maybe we should still continue to have discussions with people who disagree with.
I definitely think there is still hope. I mean, we're essentially planting seeds in the minds of these people that may sprout later. And I think that's important. As you said, it's highly emotional right now. And I think that's by design, partially by what the media is doing. You know, I don't watch TV. I don't do anything like that. But when I do, sometimes just to see what they're doing, it dawns on me that, wow, this is why they're so emotional. Let's take the mask issue, for example. You said it's been highly politicized. And it's now down to the point that they're literally telling people on the news and on the radio that the anti-mask people out there, they're selfish pricks. You know, don't think about the fact that they may have a health condition, who knows what, post-traumatic stress disorder, a whole host of issues on why they might not be able to wear a mask. But no, they're selfish and they're only thinking about themselves. And that's what they're telling these people. And these people believe this. And I started to notice that just by simply walking around into stores without a mask on. I haven't worn a mask once throughout this entire thing. I did once when I was boarding a plane, just to go from my plane to my seat, I wore one, but that was over 6 months ago and I haven't worn one since. But the more that this continues, the more stink I get from the people in the stores. And lately the experience I'm getting is no issues from the employees, it's from other customers who give me that terrible stink eye look of how dare you selfish individual. And that emotions is coming from people watching far too much television. If they just shut it off, we'd be so much far better off right now.
Yeah, like that saying, if you don't watch news, you're uninformed. If you do watch news, you're misinformed. It's absolutely true. Some of the people who have the best grasp on what's going on are people who aren't watching the news at all because they're not being brainwashed and they can just look at things logically. When everybody you know is asymptomatic and it's had the virus and nobody is dying, and every professional athlete that keeps testing positive keeps saying the same thing, I'm asymptomatic, nothing's going on. And then in 2 weeks, you're watching them on TV play sports again at the, you know, at a pro level with elite athletes. How fucking dangerous is this virus, really? Like, it's just, it's insanity. So I actually, before we run out of time, because I don't want to talk too long from about all these other things and not get into some of your background, because you have been doing this for a long time. How did you get into journalism, documentary filmmaking, and all this stuff? What led you down this path?
Well, I woke up in the late 90s. It was around 1998 or so that a friend of mine told me about a number of things, gave me a box of VHS tapes, and there was an interview with David Icke in there. There was an Alex Jones film in there. In 2000, I started watching all that stuff, and I started to really gain a pretty solid understanding of things. And then when 9/11 happened, I was like, okay, it's time to get active here. You can only do so much research and learn about these things, and then you got to do something. So it was shortly after 9/11 that I started meeting like-minded people. I looked for groups online. I found one, Toronto 9/11 Truth, it was called. And we used to go hit up the streets in early 2002, 2003, 4, 5, handing out DVDs and flyers and trying to educate people. But I started to see a lot of infighting within the groups, and there are a lot of different ideas about what the solutions ought to be. And I eventually realized I just got to do my own thing, just branch out and just say things that I want to say and do my own thing. So that's when I started Press for Truth in 2006. I decided, you know, I went to a Bilderberg conference. I took a video camera with me, and I was like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to document things and expose it to the world. And it was just a natural progression of my activism, which led to journalism work. And then the video making kind of morphed into documentary filmmaking, because it was like, well, this just happened. And yeah, I could put together another 10-minute video, but why not put together a 2-hour-long feature documentary? So just kind of fell into that. And then by 2012 or so, I went full time essentially. And I have been since then. I just eat, sleep, and breathe Press for Truth. I try to bang out daily videos and still make documentary films. And that's how it came about. So really, it was just an organic kind of natural snowball effect, because I dove in headfirst a long time ago, didn't have a clue what I was doing, and just kind of navigated it and figured it out as I went. And here we are, speaking with you guys and these fine folks who are listening. So it's been a wild journey. Yeah, that's the background.
Yeah. And that's even more why I get upset about the censorship stuff, because people don't realize that people like yourself who are doing it full time, like when you get your YouTube channel deleted, when you get all these methods of connecting with your listeners, your fans, it's a huge deal. It affects you financially. It affects you in many different ways.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it sure did. Well, let's talk about the financials for a second. You know, when I was first demonetized from YouTube, back then I was averaging around $3,000 to $4,000 a month from YouTube ad revenues. And to have that all of a sudden, that source of revenue disappear, and it's not like it trickled away, it just all of a sudden was no longer, you're not getting that anymore. But I eventually realized that it was truly a blessing in disguise. What the hell was I doing relying on Google money anyways? I never should have been in that situation in the first place. It was really opened my eyes and freed me, and realized I ought to be beholden to the viewers. I want them to be able to fund me directly. Forget about the big guys and their cut and this and that. So really, yeah, when it first happened, it felt like a big blow in the information war, right? Like they just took a limb off. But I eventually started to see it on the brighter side of things and realized, gosh, this is a blessing in disguise. And now I've already kind of replaced the income I used to get from there, because the good faithful viewers stepped up to the plate and started becoming Patreon members, Subscribestar members, donating here and there, and it's all worked out. So again, it was just a blessing in disguise that I'm no longer reliant on Google money or YouTube for that matter.
Did it take some time once you kind of started losing your I don't want your listenership, I almost said clientele, I'm like, it's not clientele, listenership on those other platforms. Did it take a while for them to transition and follow you on these other platforms, on Odyssey,
sure,
Flow, BitChute?
I've been telling them to do it for years. I got on BitChute 3.5 years ago. Wow. I got on a lot of these platforms, you know, as a hedge against the coming censorship. This is no secret. I knew this was coming, and I've literally been warning my audience about it for years, multiple times. And I had, you know, well over 250,000 subscribers there. I currently I'm just about to hit 30,000 on BitChute. So clearly, hardly any of them have actually migrated over. And that's a shame. You know, I don't know why the reason for that is. Maybe they're just
convenience. I think convenience. That's unfortunately, you know, as humans, it's all about the path of least resistance, right? Like if there's a little app that I can just click compared to putting a URL, even though it's not that hard to put a URL in, it's just what people will do. So I think having an app for all these platforms, I know Library has an app, Float has an app. I think that's kind of a step in the right direction. I know Rockfin doesn't have an app yet, which I'm kind of surprised, but I think that's kind of what we need.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really interesting time. We're like in the Wild West of these tech platforms and these industries trying to kind of come out on top. And that's also why I've hedged myself and kind of diversified my video sharing platform portfolio, so to speak. So I'm into Float and Odyssey and Mimes and BitChute and PocketNet. And, you know, there's so many that I start to forget about them because, you know, if any one of these guys takes off, I'm going to be quite pleased to have been gotten in on the ground floor. I'm excited to see who's going to come out on top. Each platform offers different things and some guys are doing things better than others. And, I'm excited to promote all of them because for the most part, what I'm finding right now is these new guys are not censoring, people like myself. So, then again, are they just going to be taken down in the near future? You know, like they just tried to do with Parler. So that's why we need to diversify right now. Because it's like I said, it's the Wild West. We're not sure who's going to come out on top, but hopefully it's the good guys.
Yeah, the whole Parler thing's crazy. I said on Twitter, I'm like, I think JFK was physically eliminated, and Trump's digitally eliminated, and maybe possibly for similar reasons in regards to kind of fighting back against the establishment. Which for a while, I'm like, everybody who wants to believe Trump is the savior and whatnot, but. Now looking at how everybody turned on him, I'm like, it kind of makes their argument more than ever. The fact that maybe he was not in the club, he wasn't a part of the clique, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the extent to which he understands how much of a puppet he has been used, I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe he doesn't realize that extent, but I truly believe that in this stage of the game, you do not become president of the United States unless the powers that ought not to be have allowed that to happen. So he's in there for a reason. And, I can't believe people aren't seeing the false left-right paradigm for what it is. Every 4 years, they're being played like a bunch of fools down there. It's like more choreographed than a ballet. It's just insane what's happening, and people don't see it for what it really is. I think this virtual inauguration in a couple days should really say something to people. Because, look, nobody was going to be there anyways. Who voted for this old man? It was always going to be an empty inauguration. And when people look at it and they go, look at what Obama's looked like and look at what Trump's looked like. Why is there nobody coming out here? Yeah, because nobody voted for him. But now they have the excuse. Oh, the Capitol insurrection is why nobody's here. We have to keep the bad people away. That's why nobody's here. No, I think it's because the guy couldn't get a couple thousand people to turn out for a rally if his life depended on it. And now they have the excuse to say, well, this is why you're not seeing many people. It's because of those dangerous insurrectionists. It's just unbelievable what's happening right before our very eyes. So the next couple of days are going to be very, very interesting to pay attention to what's going on at the Capitol Hill in Washington.
Yeah, the you're absolutely right. Nobody voted for Biden. People voted for Trump or against Trump. And that's, you know, that's basically what people would have, the left would have voted for anybody if they're running against Trump. And I think that's a huge issue. I do, you know, I agree with you. And I've always had this idea. I mean, even when people want to talk about politics on my show, I'd always kind of be disengaged or not that interested. But now looking at just the way they colluded to take him down, the way they colluded to it almost seems like they're making a example out of him. I mean, to go to this extent, I mean, it almost makes me feel like, okay, maybe he, in some sense, he was pushing back against establishment a tad more than previous presidents. I mean, the other thing about previous presidents, most of them were either already dirty politicians before running for president, or they were, you know, attorneys, which is equally as dirty. He was the only one that was neither. You know, he was never really a politician. He ran. And the thing is, one topic that I've talked a lot throughout the years on the show, and I'm always hitting on, is the big pharma censorship thing. The power of propaganda that big pharma has in regards to, like, you look at the military industrial complex, the way they can lie to us into wars and convince the public that we need to go to these wars. And they have that type of influence on media and TV and all and information. Like, Big Pharma is now scarier than them. So why can't they convince us that we need the vaccine and this virus is dangerous and whatnot? And so you look at the power of Big Pharma, and then Trump did do some things that, I mean, obviously Operation Warp Speed was scary as fuck, but he did publicly, when he was running, question vaccines. He did, you know, come out and kind of throw a curveball when he was kind of promoting hydroxychloroquine, when really it was a generic cheap drug, and what Big Pharma really wanted was a more expensive drug or something, you know, that was more profitable. So those are things that kind of make me, you know, you talk to, like, you know, when I talk to Del Bigtree, when I talk to a lot of people who are passionate about the vaccine issue and vaccine freedoms, they are similar to myself, where they go back and forth. You know, it's like sometimes Trump does something, you're like, oh, okay, he's kind of on our team. And then he does something else, and you're like, what the fuck is he doing? So, and maybe that's, like you said, maybe, you know, that's again a part of the game and that we get caught up in.
Well, look, speaking of Big Pharma, that's an important one to understand when we're navigating this COVID-1984 nightmare. And I just put out an interview today, fantastic interview with the one and only G. Edward Griffin. It's titled Big Pharma in the Age of COVID-1984 with G. Edward Griffin. And man, oh man, does he ever lay it out really, really well, how Germany's IG Farben connected with Rockefeller Standard Oil, and they formed a cartel that was all about taking over the pharmaceutical industries. They then used their billions from the wars to send grants to all the medical universities. They then put a member of the Rockefeller Foundation on the board of all of these universities. They then changed the curriculum to move it from all natural medicines, get exercise, you know, use this natural thing, to chemicals. This is the new science. This is now what we teach. So, and man, oh man, G. Edward Griffin really eloquently lays it all out in this interview that I just put out today. So if anybody wants to check that out, it's on my BitChute channel, or you can just find it at pressfortruth.ca. Just check that one out. Big Pharma in the Age of COVID-1984. Man, G. Edward Griffin really nails it in this interview. And then explains how it ties into today, and how Bill Gates essentially is following the Rockefeller philanthropist model of taking over an entire industry, philanthropy, right? That's the guys. But he's following the model that Rockefeller provided to do that with Big Pharma. Gates is now doing with vaccines. And again, G. Edward Griffin just very eloquently connects all the dots. Check that one out if you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, he's been doing it for a long time. And he's also been talking about this Big Pharma thing for a long time. I mean, before there was a YouTube, he was talking about it, you know. So
Horn, the guy, you know, was talking about this stuff.
Yeah. I have so much respect for him. He's been on my show also, and he's been on one of the Union of the Unwanted shows. And I remember, like, everybody that was on was like, they almost seemed like starstruck. Like, you could tell they were a tat, because so many of us. You were on that one. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So it was awesome to kind of bring him to all these people. But those shows are, you know, I love doing those shows because it does. You talked about infighting previously. That is an issue in alternative media, especially around like the 9/11 stuff or like certain specific topics, where people will turn on each other because they differ slightly in perspective on something, on a detail. And it's like, I have such an issue with that. You know, I knock on wood, like everybody who's been on my show, more or less, I think 99% of them have been super pleasant. And well, everybody's been super pleasant, but I've disagreed with quite a few of them in regards to, like, you know, maybe saying this person's a shill, or this person was purposely, you know, deceiving somebody and whatnot. And I'm just like, well, what if, you know, we just differ in opinion? If they think this detail and I think that detail, but yet we're both fighting for the same thing, we're both fighting the same people, we're on the same fucking team. Like, you know, I use the analogy, like, if we're playing basketball and I want to run a pick and roll and you want to run a pick and pop, like, our goal is to score. We're still going against the same person, the same team. We're still on the same team. We just have different, I guess, perspectives on how to go about it. So it's just like this idea of, like, we're not doing anybody any good by turning on people who are actually fighting the same fight. Like, it, to me, it was crazy, especially around the 9/11 stuff, because that really was like the thing that woke me up, was the 9/11 situation. I'm 35, so I grew up, and at the time, I didn't even realize how important that whole historical event was. I just knew everybody around me was making a big deal out of it, and that's why I still have respect for people like Alex Jones, because and Edward Griffin, because you look at these guys and you go back in the archives and you do your research. Those are some of the voices that were, you know, before I even had any knowledge of any of this stuff. They were there already fighting before I jumped into fight. They're already outspoken and not being afraid of speaking truth. And you know, Alex Jones was at fucking Waco, you know, on the front lines talking to media. You know, it's crazy.
Got to give credit where credit is due. I haven't watched the man in a couple of years. I don't really follow him anymore. I think fame and money can do, you know, weird things to people, but he is the real deal. And I got to admit, let's just say hypothetically, if that man wasn't born, if he never existed, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today. He influenced me back in the early days so much that I got to give him credit for making me become what I am today. You know, that's just the truth. But as I said, having said that, I don't really follow him anymore. I started to I found it bizarre when he was promoting Trump. You know, for years he talked about the false left-right paradigm, and he thinks just all of a sudden this guy just waltzes in and he's able to just defeat this system that the oligarchy have set up for, you know, decades and decades. It was just crazy. But yeah, I mean, he's a trailblazer, and yeah, like I said, got to give credit where credit is due.
Yeah, I know a lot of people give him a lot of shit for Israel and all that stuff. But the thing is, like, every person in the alternative media world, I could find something I probably disagree with them on or something that they're not talking about that I wish they did. But I don't see them as my enemy because of it. You know, when people turn on somebody like Alex Jones and they say, and that's the thing, his censorship, I mean, really look at it. Like, the collusion that they, you know, that happened to get him off all the big platforms, basically the same thing ended up happening to Trump. I mean, this isn't good regardless. It's like that World War II quote, you know, first they came for, you know, these people and I said nothing. Then they said came for these people and I said nothing. Then they came for me and there's nobody else here left. You know, it's that same kind of idea.
You know, I actually confronted Eric Schmidt, the former head of Google, about the removal of Alex Jones off of the internet. I got him on that question at Bilderberg. I was covering a Bilderberg and there's Eric Schmidt. And I asked him face to face, you know, I said, basically, like, not so many words, but are you guys responsible for the removal of conservative voices online? You know, particularly the memory holding of Alex Jones. And obviously, like a typical Bilderberg interaction, they don't give you a whole lot of true answers. He just actually took out his phone and started filming me in that interaction. Exactly, like not even less than a month later, I think it was, my channel was completely demonetized. But yeah, we did me and Luke Radowski and another guy, Josh Friedman, the three of us surrounded Eric Schmidt and confronted him about the idea that Bilderberg is responsible for removing conservative voices offline. And yeah, all of a sudden, a few months later, we all start getting taken down. It's pretty wild. I'm not saying they're connected. Maybe, may not be. Seems interesting that just shortly after confronting Eric Schmidt of Google, they started shutting our channels down.
Well, it makes sense that it is connected because why else would he be recording you? I mean, obviously, if he posted a video of you, it'd only make you more famous. It wouldn't hurt you, you know? So it, that's interesting. Yeah. I don't think that's a coincidence, but it also leads to the bigger picture where, this is an issue. Obviously, we talked about the infighting issue, but the other issue is people being okay with voices they don't like being censored. And this, they don't realize that it's a slippery slope. And I know people use that term all the time and sometimes too often, but it really is. And you're seeing it where you can't, you know, where somebody is deciding what truth is for you. The idea that we almost look at the internet like it's this AI that controls itself and does all this logical thinking on its own without any human influence, because we look at like Twitter and Facebook and which, again, and I say this over and over again because it's fucking outrageous that Twitter has child porn on there. Chrissy Mayer, who's been on my show a bunch of times, she's been on the Union of the Unwanted also, she literally tagged child porn on their accounts, saying, I've been reporting these. Why are these still up? And yet you're banning people who just have a different opinion. And it's like, and then people, you see in the comments, people would be like, yeah, I reported that channel too. I reported that. And this stuff would stay out there. Like, you're talking, and how is that not priority one? How is that not what should be ripped off? I mean, look at Elsa Gate when you were seeing all these weird kid videos that were popping up that nobody knew what the hell was going on and how this was, you know, staying online. But yet they have no problem, you know, erasing every person who talks about Q. And I'm not a Q person, but I think they have the right to discuss it. If that's what they believe, then, you know, then that's fine with me. You know, this idea. And then this idea that, like, I don't know, it works me up because people don't realize that this is a bigger issue. Like, right now, the people in power are censoring people you disagree with. But one day, the people you agree with might be censored. And by then, it's too fucking late.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, it's that whole first they came for, you know, and I like the addition to that, you know, first they came for the journalists. We don't know what happened after that. And yeah, this is really, really scary territory to be marching into, to the point where they can completely silence people for their opinions. As you said, if you don't believe in free speech for someone that you despise, you know, the saying goes, you don't believe in it at all. And and that's really important for people to understand moving forward. That is, if you truly do believe in free speech, like, if you don't like what somebody else is saying, you don't have to listen. But he should still have the right to be able to say it, you know, unless he's calling on people to bring harm against someone else or something like that. But yeah, this is just an important fundamental part of society that they're trying to dismantle. And scary. It's scary, man, moving forward, how divided people are becoming. And like 2020 was a bumpy ride. I think 2021 is going to be even crazier under Biden. Hate to say it, but this is going to be a wild ride.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I've kind of been pondering on that myself about how everybody's like, well, you know, now that Biden's in office. And that's the thing. Like, it all almost worked because you had all the protests that were violent and whatnot. You had all the chaos with that. You had the coronavirus chaos. You had all these things going on. And it was so chaotic. The world seemed so chaotic that people are like, you know what? I fucking hate Biden, but I just hope he wins so this can end. Like, they actually convinced people that things will be better if we just vote this person. Where some people who I know didn't want to vote for him actually voted for him just because they're like, you know what? I just want my fucking life back. And I'm like, I do too. But giving into it to the system, the corrupt system, I'm like, is not going to get your life back. I'm like, you have to be outspoken. I'm a big believer, like you said, like planting the seed of doubt in people's narrative on how they look at the world. I've had many discussions where people are like, oh, I've given up on people. I'm like, you know, one, I can't give up on people because once these discussions get brought up, I get so worked up and passionate about it that I'm like, I feel the need to have to say something. And two, I truly believe if I don't get through to them, then at least I put a little crack in their armor. And little by little, you know, maybe they end up running into one of your videos and they run into somebody else's video and then they talk to somebody else. And we all start just putting cracks in their armor. And then that, you know, finally their narrative just kind of shatters and they're like, oh shit, maybe there's something here. So we're all doing our part. I mean, that's why I named the podcast Ripple Effect Podcast. I truly believe in the ripple effect and this idea that we can all make a difference, we can all make a change. And look at you. I mean, you got a box of VHSs. Some people listening don't even know what a VHS is, and that changed your life, and now you're huge in the alternative media world. You have a successful career and you're, you know, OG in our community. And so who knew that little act of giving you a box of VHSs could have changed your path, which led to changing a lot of other people's paths? I mean, I've been watching your videos for a long time and in interviews with you for a long time. And a lot of other people, I'm sure, also have who now are outspoken. And you were a part of planting that seed or you know, putting a little crack in their narrative in how they look at the world. So you know, you can never underestimate the power of these little acts.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate that. I hope that, you know, that indeed is the case. I have had a lot of people contact me before and just say, oh man, you know, you've inspired me to do this or that. And I mean, that's really fantastic. I mean, like I was inspired by people to, you know, not just Jones, there's other people in this space that have really inspired me to step up my game as well. You know, guys who I've looked up to, and wanted to emulate, you know, kind of thing. And yeah, that's how it goes. And what a fantastic name with the ripple effect, because yeah, this is exactly what we're doing. This is why we just have to keep doing it. Hopefully it continues to permeate its way throughout society and really starts to resonate with people out there that, yeah, we're on the side of truth. We're when history looks back at this time, we will be recognized as the guys who were fighting the good fight. We are the soldiers in the info war who are doing the right thing. And hopefully people will recognize that in the future.
Well, like our mutual friend James Corbett said, you know, the burning of the Library of Alexander, there is something about me being, I'm a little afraid that, you know, they're rewriting history as we're living it. Because right now, you know, our kids who are growing up in this world, people who are growing up in this world who aren't adults and aren't, you know, aren't brainwashed. And if our children go back and research what happened in 2020, that fucking crazy year that everybody's talking about, let me go research what happened. They're not going to find my podcast or your video or your channel or whatnot. They're going to find the mainstream media's articles and videos and interviews and whatnot and their perspective on what happened. And it's going to be one side of the argument, and that will alone rewrite history. So it's without a doubt. I mean, it's so important that we all do something. We all, you know, I tell people all the time, I'm like, I know that there's a lot of podcasts out there, but there's never enough. If these are the type of conversations you're putting out there, if you're being open-minded, if you're exploring, if you're researching, and you're not, you know, you're just trying to put something out there that's different than what people are seeing on TV, then there can't be enough of us, because they, who knows which one of us they'll run into and who we're affecting and who we're influencing. And I think that's super important, because there is a danger that if one of these alternatives don't really blow up, and which I think they will, because just like at the height of MySpace, nobody ever saw it collapsing and moving on to the next thing, especially with kids, because kids, you know, once your parents are on Facebook and your grandparents and your uncles, like, it's not cool anymore. So it's like, oh, is there a new one? Yeah, let's go there, because it's all people our age. It's not kids. So I'm hoping one of these alternatives will take off. The problem is, like you said, like, you're trying to put them everywhere. So when one does take off, you're already there. But that's fucking time consuming. You know, that's really time consuming. So it is hard to kind of keep up with all of them and try to plant, you know, have a channel on all of them, just in case one really takes off. But I don't even know what the fuck my question was. I'm sure I had one.
Well, you said something that I wanted to add to. I would just say to any of the listeners that are listening to this right now, viewers and listeners who are on the fence and maybe thinking that they too would like to start making podcasts or start doing videos or start writing a blog or just starting to try to make a difference in some way, shape, or form. Maybe they're not sure how, but they're just thinking, you know what? This is resonating with me, and I can only do so much research until it's time to get active. Well, I would just say, if that's you today, dive in head first and just start doing it. There's no excuse at this stage in the game. It's relatively, I mean, you can set up a website pretty much for free. You can create a YouTube channel for free. These devices that we have at our fingertips, we can now use these to do what it took news media agencies millions and millions of dollars and satellites and editing bands and this and that. We can now do it with the power of what we have here at our fingertips. So there's no excuse anymore. Like, if you're on the fence and thinking about doing it, just start doing it. And as I did, I dove in head first, not really knowing what I was doing, but I figured it out along the way, and you guys will too. So I just want to encourage anybody who's inspired by the things Ricky or myself have been doing, you can do it too. It just involves taking that first step, diving head first in, figuring out as you go. And if you build it, they will come.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And worst case scenario, you get a sense of fulfillment. You know, you feel like you're doing something, you're contributing something. That was a big part of my influence and inspiration to why I started doing it. I didn't feel like I was contributing. I knew there was all these issues I was researching and I was learning about. And I'm like, well, what am I doing to help improve this? Nothing. So I'm like, I need to do something. I don't know how much of an effect I'll have. on anybody or anything, but at least I know I tried and I attempted to do something.
I even went through a period of serious discouragement because I was really trying hard. I was really plugging away. And from the years of maybe 2008 to 2010, I felt that I was producing really good content and just not getting the views, not getting the recognition or whatever, just nobody noticing what I'm doing. And it went like that for what felt like a couple of years, but I just, it wasn't about that for me. I just continued to plug away, hone in on what I'm doing, get better at what I'm doing, and continue to just do what I do. And eventually the people started to take notice. But a lot of people get discouraged and they just kind of try it for a few years. It doesn't really take off like they had hoped and they just kind of fade away. I've seen a lot of people in this movement come and go, but I would just say, consistency is key. You just keep at it. You be true to yourself. You know, the people always spot out a phony and the people who are in this for all the wrong reasons. If you're getting into this for fame or hero worship or recognition or money, you're going to be spotted as a phony and you're not going to make it anywhere. But if your intentions are good, people will recognize that and you will do just fine. So, hey, again, I just want to encourage people to join. Like Ricky said, we need more voices. Maybe you have some things that you can bring to the table that others don't. I used to, people back in the day used to say, Dan, man, I love you and Alex Jones, but I'm starting to like you better because you're refreshing. You don't yell and you're not like aggressive like he is, and you're calm in your nature, and that works better for me. You know, so we all have different things that we can bring to the table that you might not even realize. So I just want to tell people to jump in and start doing it.
Yeah. Brett Vanat from the School Sucks Project told me that I think the average podcast is 7 episodes. So what does that tell you? You know, a lot of people dip their toes and then they never pursue it. So a lot of times the only difference between you and I, you know, be doing this for as long as we have, or the average person who disappears, is just we kept doing it. We didn't stop. And like you said, you know, if you just keep doing it, then good things will eventually come. We've all been in those positions where I was the same way, where I was doing what I thought was like, oh my God, amazing interviews. I'm getting all these awesome guests and I really feel like I'm doing important work. And then I'm like, why isn't anything happening? Like you release something, you're like, this is gonna be the show. This is gonna be the show that's like, I'm gonna blow up, everybody's gonna start, you know, noticing, you know, my show. And then you're like, okay, I need to stop worrying about that. And when you look at music, filmmakers, all other arts, you know, or people who are content creators, the best ones, like you said, are ones who are motivated by what? Their work, their passion, not financial reasons. I use the example of like hair bands, right? You have the metal bands that stuck around past that hair band era, like the Metallicas, the Iron Maidens, the Judas Priest, whoever it may be, because they were good and you liked them and they were writing music because they loved music and they loved what they were doing. And then you had the people who were like, hey, let me just jump on board and have big hair and talk about strippers and think I'm going to, you know, I can just make a couple bucks. Well, you made a couple quick bucks, but the problem is that because you weren't sincere, because you didn't have a real passion for those things, people saw through it and then, you know, you disappeared. So I think being sincere and being passionate, people do see that and they do connect with that and they do appreciate that, which I think is super important.
For sure. Yeah, that's a really good analogy. I like it.
But I know, Dan, you're a super busy guy. You have, speaking of Press for Truth, I'm sure you have tons of things to do today to get some more content out. So I don't want to take up any more of your time, but thank you so much, Dan, for being with me. I appreciate all the years of work and content you've been putting out for so many years. And hopefully we talk again in the near future. I think you're going to be on the Greater Reset, right? You're also going to be...
I'm just kind of watching it and promoting it, but
yeah,
I'm
not
speaking at it or anything.
Okay, yeah. I've heard you talk about it and whatnot. Yeah, so yeah, I haven't even looked at the guest list. I think Corbett's on there, Richard Grove,
yeah,
a few.
Solid, yeah.
Yeah. So that's a great idea. So we're obviously, because we talked about censorship, now would be a great time to let people know all the platforms they can find your work. Where can people find you?
Sure, you search Press for Truth and you'll find it. It's so bitchute.com/pressfortruth, mind.com/pressfortruth, odyssey.tv, I think it is,
yeah,
/pressfortruth,
like,
or lbry. If you go to pressfortruth.ca, my website, we have a banner right now at the top. I think it says Press for Truth Band. And if you click on that, it has a list to all the places where you can currently find me. Or if you just look in the description of any one of my videos, you'll see all the new platforms that I'm now focusing on. So yeah, pressfortruth.ca or the description of any one of my videos and you'll find me.
Awesome. Awesome. Hopefully we will meet again on a future Union of the Unwanted show also.
Yeah, for sure. Those are really fun. Let me know.
Hey, great. Thanks, Dan. I appreciate your time. Take care.
Take care.
I believe in the ripple effect.